Trigger warning. This episode contains religion.
Will we just get...
I think it's
this bullshit.
The saddest, most stressed out. Let's dive in.
So before I start, I just want to say that I got all of my resources for this week's episode on E! Online. Paradise Lost, the documentary series, part 1, part 2, part 3. Brain Scratch on YouTube. So I'm going to be covering the infamous Robin Hood Hills murders / the West Memphis 3. And girls, what I tell you, this is the most scandalous, or one of the most scandalous things I have ever seen in my life. Like, I remember Ma decided to rent out a DVD, right, when I was about 12, because Colin Firth and what's her name, Reese Witherspoon, were in it, right? She thinks they're a stellar cast, so this has to be a question. It's not going to traumatise her kids. So she got it out for me and my cousin Rachel. We put it on, and it's actually about this story. But on the film, they reenact the crime scene to its entirety. And I was traumatised. And then as well, before I was reading an article, shouldn't have been, at 11 or 12, about, you know, infamous cases that haven't been solved. And I saw the real crime scene, so just a ball of anxiety. And then when I was watching the documentary for the research, what did they fucking show? The crime scene photos. So just...
Of course.
Bit of warning. If you do want to check out Paradise Lost, be warned. They're extremely graphic. They're very, very upsetting to see. And you will more than likely cry. Because I did. And sometimes I think I'm a bit of a tough bitch, but that broke me. It's horrible. So just a bit of a warning. So we're going to start on the day that the boys were found. So May 5th, 1993, in West Memphis, Arkansas, 8-year-old Christopher Byers, Michael Moore, and Stevie Branch would be last seen cycling their bikes on Macaulay Drive during sunset, approximately 8 p.m. 2 hours later, the boys' parents were concerned as neither of them had returned home. Christopher Byers' stepfather, John Mark Byers, was the first to contact the police and report the boys missing. The first decided to check the area of Robin Hood Hills, which is an area located between the boys' homes and one of the busiest intersections in the country. Like, constantly people in and out the whole time. Extremely busy and very, very dangerous. So the kids would play here, like, quite a lot. But, like, that was surrounded by thick woods, drain pikes. And with it being so close to the interstate, the place would often be frequented by, like, truckers and drifters. But even the kids knew themselves, like, okay, I can't hang around here after dark. So they wouldn't. So the cops showed up to the hills area to start the search. But Arkansas, like, in their woods... very, very thick with mosquitoes, like, to the point that you can't go in it. Like, that's how thick the swarms do be.
Oh my god, I'd fucking definitely die of, like, an effect.
Would light myself on fire.
Actually, fuck that.
Absolutely sick. But on that night of May 5th, the mosquitoes were so thick that they had to call off the nightly search and start first thing the following morning. Nobody could hack it. It was just, like, Jesus. Especially then with, like, how dark the woods is, they'd already have, like, their flashlights and stuff. Because there would have been no floodlights or anything. So trying to see in the dark and then, like, mosquito swarms, you're not finding anything. So
no.
I'm not saying
you can't concentrate,
they were right to call
anything.
It off, but they wouldn't have found anything.
Honestly, this is like the actual start of a horror movie. Like,
oh, just it's...
But after it gets dark, like, anyways, like, it's not a good idea to have, like, search teams out looking for people because someone else could get lost, you know? It's not a good idea to be kind of putting... the searchers at risk because it just causes a bigger drama.
Yeah, exactly. Now, in the morning, the cops were joined by many locals in the search, but not one of them could last in the woods past noon, so 12 o'clock, because the mosquitoes were still really thick and it was sweltering heat. But a man by the name of Steve Jones, who we will meet many times later, and you will fucking hate him, but to his credit, he was the only person that stayed in the woods looking for the boys, bar the cops. So Steve was walking along a gully, which is kind of like, from what I could make out, like a bog ditch. Do you know, so there's like land either side and there's like a big kind of stream or ditch of water.
Yeah, okay.
And he saw a laceless tennis shoe floating in the water. He immediately radioed the cops that showed up to his location only 15 minutes later. A detective jumped into the water and just started walking. He was looking for any evidence he could find when his foot hit something solid, and the body of Michael Moore came floating to the top. He had been hogtied with his own shoelaces, his body covered with small cuts, and he had suffered severe blunt force trauma to the head. The next thing to be found were a bunch of sticks, conspicuously placed on the riverbed, and upon further instruction it was discovered that the sticks were being used to weigh down the boy's clothes. The only thing missing, weirdly, were the underpants, but everything else had been turned inside out, zipped, buttoned up, and folded. And to me, that is just, it's so bizarre. Like,
yeah.
That's, yeah, that's like very...
It doesn't make sense. Do you know the way with certain crimes, just say, like, bodies, the person who would kill them would, like, pose them in, like, a peaceful position or would, like, cover them because it's, like, they still meant something to them? I don't know if this was, like, another weird way of, like, doing that or something. I don't know. It's just, it doesn't make sense.
These are, right, these are kids.
Yeah, all 8 years old.
All I can think of is, like, you know, like, their mothers... I don't know why I'm making such a sad point, but their mothers would have done that for them. They would have folded up their clothes nicely and put them away and that kind of thing. They did it backwards. So it's like,
is there a reason?
It's almost like it's a reverse of it, but still with the same care, but just wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. 100%.
And that's it. There's a lot to that. Like, just that little detail alone, so much to it.
And it's like, where do you even begin to unpack it?
Yeah.
Because no like, yeah, one that's like knows why.
The guess off the top of my head, of course, but I haven't a fucking clue why they would have done that.
So 15 minutes had passed and Stevie Branch was found downstream. He was tied the same as Michael, suffered blunt force trauma, but the left side of his face appeared to be mutilated. Mm-hmm. Now, this one, like, but obviously, all of them are completely terrible. This one just kind of went a little bit of an extra mile. Christopher Byers would be the last found. Similar to both boys, he'd been hogtied, had blunt force trauma, but he also had several cuts on his groin and his genitals were almost completely lacerated. Like, they were just completely severed nearly.
Oh, good God.
Yeah. So the police, now this is going to fuck you off, would leave the boys on the riverbank for nearly 2 whole hours before they called the medical examiner while they searched for more evidence. And the last thing to be found were the boys' bikes. And the last thing Steve Jones said at the scene was, "Looks like Damien has finally killed someone. Now we're going to turn our attention to the 3 teenage boys whose lives were completely fucking ruined by lazy police work, Bible-bashing Christians that can't fucking separate law and religion." And these boys would be 18-year-old Damien Eccles, 17-year-old Jesse Miss Kelly, and 16-year-old Jason Baldwin. Like, I'm going to have to... Yeah, he drew this conclusion from fucking nowhere. Because now I'm going to have to go and, like, I'm telling you about who these boys were, a bit of their background, and what led to them being accused of fucking a triple child murder. And none of it, absolutely none of it, makes any sense as to why they were convicted for it. So we're going to start with Damien Eccles, who was the prosecutor's main focus and also the main focus of the people who would later try and get these 3 boys free. Because he was done so fucking dirty in this. All of them were, but he was targeted especially. So Damien actually came from a very financially poor background. His house was that of a shack in the middle of a dirt field that was constantly sprayed with pesticides, which resulted in Damien developing severe allergies, bronchitis and asthma. Like, he was actually known in town as the poor kid. Like, this was already a very poor area, but he was the poorest of the poor, to the point somebody actually dedicated an art piece in an exhibition to the fucking house that he lived in, because it was that much of like a shanty shack, and he had Jesus to look Christ. At that anytime he went into the bank, because it was displayed there.
That's fucking ridiculous,
isn't it?
Okay, so he was poor, no wonder he was targeted. That makes complete sense.
So not only was Damien relentlessly taunted for his family's financial situation, but also for the clothes he wore and the music he listened to. So Damien Damien would don the school hallways in band tees, a black trench coat and tiny sunglasses. And I'm fucking sorry, that is very much a vibe, and I have that exact outfit in my wardrobe.
I was literally about to say that's Lizzie.
I love a tiny sunglass and a band tee and a trench coat.
Honestly, it's just Matrix vibes. Why are you hating on it? Just like...
Because he called this his vampire look. Now, I probably would have skated at him as well, I won't lie, for calling it a vampire look, but the outfit itself is very...
Yeah, he's not doing himself any favours in terms of being bullied. Like, I'll give him that. But still, it's never the goth kid that kills someone. No. I'm sorry, it isn't.
It's not. Like...
Quiva made a face like, are you sure?
Oh, no way. Actually, no way.
I'm thinking of the 2 fucking boys in the trench coats who went in and shot the whole school
Columbine up. Fucking... What's their tits?
Oh. Yeah, but they weren't goth kids. They were just...
They were wearing the same shit that he was wearing.
Yeah.
So...
But I feel like, was that just not the whole school shooter vibe? Like, were they actually goth kids? Because
I think they were just trying to... They were trying to do the Scary Matrix cape cloak thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I feel like...
So therefore, they don't count.
And there was
not really. Like, I feel like if I saw a lad wearing a trench coat, two lads walking around wearing trench coats in school, no matter, even if I didn't know about Columbine, I would be like, they're fucking weird. Because it's weird. I'm sorry, but
yeah,
it
no,
is.
I'm not saying it's not weird. I'm saying the goth kid is never the serial killer.
But no, but it was the clothes that they were wearing that was what drew attention to them, not the fact that they were goths.
There was one, though. There was a fella, this is not relevant at all, but there was a fella, he's in prison, I don't know what his name is, but like that, he dressed like that, called himself a vampire, was very much like heavy metal, and then I think he killed like three people, him and his band of like little fucking misfit Twilight games.
You either are that person or you're pretending to be that person because it makes sense for what you're going to do.
Exactly. And it fits into a fucking narrative that people already have of you.
Yes, that they're already willing to buy.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was the point I was trying to make. It's never the real ones.
No.
Yeah. No, no, no.
They're too busy. I feel like we're all on. Lives to hate anybody else. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
We are all in agreement. We just didn't realise that we were.
So Damien would actually fuck with the other kids in school because he wanted to kind of control how he was being bullied. Like, look, he fucking knew he was going to get bullied anyway, but he was going to control what he was being bullied for.
May as well give them a reason.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean,
so he'd like to
absolutely
tell,
on board.
He'd like to kill or tell the kids, like, oh yeah, I drink blood, just to see them shit themselves. And remember, we're in Bible Belt America. So something like that completely freaked little kids out. And he
Well, that's
it.
Satanic, like, you know what I mean? That's...
Yeah, oh yeah, like, because...
They went home and told their parents,
and
like...
I drink blood. And like any other stereotypical goth kid, Damien practiced Wicca, worshipped a female goddess, and had a shitty tattoo of the feminine symbol. So, given all of that, he was perceived to be a little bit of a nutter, which...
I mean, look, like, he would anywhere. Like, if someone in school would tell you they were drinking blood, I'd be like, they're crazy as fuck. Like, okay, I know he was trying to, like... He was definitely trying to play a character, but he played it too well.
Far too well. Yeah. And even by his own admission later on when he was an adult, he was like, I did myself absolutely no fucking favours at all.
No, he really didn't. Like, I am here for this kid. I am loving him and his, like, just leaning into it. Because, like, fuck
everything.
It, may as well. Exactly. But no favours
were
done.
No, Jesus Christ. So, when he was 17, his girlfriend, Dina Holcomb, finished with him, right? And his response to that, he was going to burn her house down and bait the shite out of the new lad that she was seeing. So, just typical nutter behaviour.
Damien,
like, come on off it. Like, he wasn't actually going to do it. But just to seem like...
Come on, my dears. Of course.
But you know, you just say things. Like, you know when people just be like, that's like me, like, oh my god, I loved boxing. And then it's like, I've never even hit anyone in my whole life aside from my sister. Like,
no, because Damien would fight quite a bit. So, like, people wouldn't know. Because he was the poor kid, everybody bullied him, so he's going to defend himself. So it's not
he
didn't have a streak in him to beat people.
Yeah, you can't be the poor kid, the goth kid, and the pussy. You have to, like, you have to be one of them. And he had to be the tough cunt as well.
Exactly.
Like,
so not even a month later, him and Dina decided they're going to run away together and form a suicide pact. Now, it wasn't at all fucking serious. It was just for the drama because they were tortured souls. Tortured little fucking goth souls. And they couldn't drive.
I had so many friends like this growing up.
Man,
like,
this is what annoys me. It's like, because this case, Annie, like, these three lads, you either can relate to it yourself or you know somebody that can't. That are exactly like these three, and like, could you imagine them getting accused of something as horrendous as a fucking...
There was always the group of kids in school that were like that, like, and everyone just... Well, in my school anyways, we just accepted them when they were sound and we got on with them. We just weren't in their group.
Yeah.
But a lot of schools...
I was in their group.
Yeah.
Yeah, Savannah, you very much are, like.
Me.
And like, you kind of wouldn't really get, like, why the fuck they were wearing what they were wearing, but you'd be kind of like, that's fine. Mm-hmm. It's kind of cool, like... Objectively.
We've all known these people.
All of them, exactly. Now, Damien or Dina couldn't drive, right? So they had to walk to wherever the fuck they were deciding to run away to. But on the night that they decided to run away, a massive storm came in. So they had to bunker down in a trailer. And somebody had called the cops on them.
Please tell me they kissed in the rain, though, because of the aesthetic.
Somebody had called the cops on them, and when the police showed up, they found him and the missus shifting. And because the trailer didn't belong to them, they got arrested for burglary and sexual misconduct. So they were both put in juvenile detention.
For having a shift.
Yeah. And that was in May 1992.
I hear. For anyone who's not from Ireland listening to us, by the way, getting the shift is like French kissing. Making out. That's what that means.
Like, it wasn't even any heavy bit of tongue action like that. Do you know what I mean? Sexual misconduct. So stupid.
Yeah, this is like the 90s in the Bible Belt. Like, no, like, I'd say that's like.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Exactly.
Fornication.
It goes very quickly from tongue to penis. Yeah.
So, the next person we're going to focus in on is Jason Baldwin. So, like Damien, Jason was your typical angsty teen. He was actually a very quiet kid, but he was also still an outsider. Jason was extremely smart and did well in all of his classes, but he was labelled a Satanist.
I was just about to say, this is the nerd version one, isn't it? Like,
yeah, kind of.
They're all a particular stereotype.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So far. We haven't got to the third guy yet, but like...
He has an amazing mullet, by the way. I'm looking at a picture of him now. An amazing curly mullet. Like...
God bless, like... He was labelled a Satanist by his peers because he'd long hair, drew skulls on his book, and listened to rock music. Even his band tees weren't accepted by his peers, which consisted of Metallica, which you can kind of understand, like, they might have been freaked out because of all the skulls, the fucking upside down crosses and shit, even though we know that's not extreme. Guns N' Roses and fucking U2. Bono was too extreme.
Bono!
When I read that, I'm tell
sorry,
you,
even I was like,
my tiny mind, I was like, you fucking too were too, like, heavy metal for these people.
Metallica is like Metallica's more not. Rock and roll. I sound like a fucking, I sound like an 8-year-old, but it is.
No, but
like, whereas like Guns N' Roses is very like not clean cut, but it's very much basic
it's
rock
like
music. And then U2.
Out of the three of them, it would go Metallica, then Guns N' Roses, then fucking U2, which doesn't it basically fucking pop music if you're putting them into the category of rock. Fuck that, like.
You might as well have like Ariana Grande in that, like, because U2.
Exactly.
You let small children listen to that, like.
Of course you would.
Honest to God.
Oh, lads.
Oh, next they're gonna tell me he was a Satanist because he loved a bit of UB40 red wine, like.
But most importantly, he was Damien Echo's best friend. So the last of the three ought to be would be Jesse Miss Kelly. So Jesse was often described as being an unfortunate soul. He had the same mental age as a third grader, or it was like an 8 or 9 year old. So he was on the cusp of, and I'm not saying this, it's in quotes, he was on the cusp of being mentally handicapped. And it didn't help that he used to huff gas.
Oh.
Yeah, the huffing doesn't... Like, stop huffing glue, stop huffing paint, and stop huffing gas. I don't know how many times I've had to say this on this podcast. Just please stop. Just don't do it.
At least allow your brain cells time to develop before you start to murder them.
So he was very sweet at heart, and also he always wanted to please other people.
Oh.
But he also came from one of the poorest trailer parks in the state, and because Arkansas was so very poor, so nearly one of the poorest trailer parks in the country. And we've already said, like, no one gave a shit about poor people. It's easier put the blame on, like, a poor kid, like we've said. Exactly. And you'll see it as well. Like, they were... No one gave a shit about them, like, at all. He was 5'1", 100 pounds, so any mean streak he did have in him came from fighting. He was bullied because he was tiny, fucking scrawny. By other people's, like, opinion, he was a bit slow. So they used to beat the shit out of him the whole time, and obviously he'd defend himself. He also had the word bitch tattooed on his chest, and it wasn't spelt properly, I don't think. So just wrap your brain around that.
B-I-C-T-H.
I don't know. I can't remember. I just remember seeing something that it may have been spelt wrong. And it would have been a case of he didn't actually want it.
You can't have all these things wrong. Like, he was seen as being not as, like, intelligent as, you know, the average kid. Spelled a fucking tattoo in his chest wrong. He was really, really small and really, really skinny. Like, there's no way he was going to come out of school without being severely bullied, like.
At all.
This kid was a walking target.
Yeah. But do you know what? He didn't even know Damien. Or Jason. But yeah, he was grouped in with them. He just needed him to see, because Damien kind of frightened the shit out of him a little bit, because he had heard Damien being like, oh, I suck blood. And that terrified Jesse, so he was like,
of course,
steer clear of that cunt. So he only knew them to see. He wasn't actually friends with them at all. But yet, he still got grouped in with them.
Again, just lump the weirdos together.
Yeah, but I'll tell you why Jesse made the list later on. But it's not because of how he dressed or the music he listened to. Because he would have very much been, I think, how would you say it? Not trailer park vibes. Do you know, like, listen to the country music. Stuff like that. Do you know where I'm going? Like,
yeah, he would have been conformative to the region. Like, he would have fit in with everyone else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, apart from the obvious reasons.
Yes, of course. So it's important to remember that satanic panic was widespread throughout America during the 70s to the 90s. And it was a result of rumours and scaremongering of cults and devil worshippers sacrificing men, women, children and animals, all in the name of Lucifer. And up until the 90s even, some cops would show up to a crime scene, speculate, looks like devil worship, looks like the work of devil worshippers, without any evidence. Ooh. Any evidence at all. And not one murder case in America can be attributed to a sacrificial cult in the name of Lucifer. Not one.
Well, isn't that fucking interesting?
Thank you. When I read that, I was like, are you fucking joking me? Because even now how it's still like highly publicised, like in Hollywood films and everything like that, there's always satanic cults going around sacrificing people for this, for that.
So I was about to ask, has anyone actually ever unironically done that?
I don't think, no, not according to any research I've done.
I don't think so.
Now we are going to go on to absolute fucking dingbats that were such a detriment to these boys. The first being Jerry Driver, the chief juvenile intake probation officer, and Steve Jones. Do you remember the guy that had found the boy, or had found the shoe that led to the cops finding the boys?
Yeah.
He was the junior assistant probation officer of Crittenden County. And both of these twats played a massive, massive part in the convictions of Damien, Jason and Jesse. So Jerry and Steve were convinced that West Memphis was hopping with satanic activity. I can't speak. Satanic activity. There we go. That's right.
new word. We're branding it. Satanic activity.
Yeah, there we go. Right. The pair of these girls, I'm not even joking, right, would drive around in a truck during a full moon hoping to catch Satanists in what they dubbed the Witch's Sabbath. Like,
oh, fuck off. They're Satanists, not werewolves. Like, oh!
They're just, like, wannabe cops that are trying to look out for kids acting this shite. But they're just more of an embarrassment to themselves than anything else. Like, they're actually pure weirdos. And who is number one on their shit list? Damien fucking Eccles, because...
Was it perchance Damien? Yeah.
Because Jerry was his probation officer from the time that he got locked up for the sexual misconduct and the burglary, even though it was breaking and entering more than burglary. Anyway, it's so stupid. So, Jerry and Steve...
Yeah, all of this is labelled wrong.
Oh, it's so bad. Like, the amount of evidence that wasn't stored correctly, shit like that that you're going to see, it's nothing is how it should have been done in this. Like, nothing at all. So, Jerry and Steve would then go out of their way to prove Damien was a Satanist. And when Damien's girlfriend, Dina... When her parents told the pair, being Jerry and Steve, that Damien attempted to get their daughter to perform black magic, well, the two of them practically fucking cummed themselves and their quest began. So they used their power, so they abused their power more like, as his probation officers to search his trailer for proof of satanic worshipping. The books hadn't even
Isn't that scandalous?
It just...
They... took advantage of their power, like they really like
they did. Okay. Yeah. Yep. Like the murders hadn't even taken place at this point. So what was the, like, there was no angle for them looking for something that was like deemed a Satanist. Because this was happening in 1992.
Oh, so this wasn't even
No, this was 1992.
This was before the three boys were found.
This was year before the boys had even died. No.
Christ. Yeah. Alright, carry on.
Like I said, the murders hadn't even taken place, so they were literally terrorising this kid for no fucking reason, no purpose, but only to look like knights in shining armour in the face of evil, when in reality they were two gimps in fucking tinfoil acting on pure delusions. And it makes me so mad because they involved themselves so heavily in this, and for no reason, no fucking reason, and it makes me so mad. Like, I actually get so angry when I read it. I'm sweating. That's how I'm...
Gimps in tinfoil. You were...
Inside Damien's trailer, they found drawings and writings of a typical goth kid. So skulls, daggers, pentagrams. His diary, which he titled The Book of Fucking Shadows, like Damien. Come off it.
Oh, God.
Damien.
Oh, God's sake.
The Book of Shadows. Like, not even, like, it's just, I find that mortifying. Like, God bless him. Like, I know that was his, like...
The Book of Shadows, like...
The Book of Shadows. My deep, so he could write down his deep and dark... Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, looking back on this now, even if nothing had ever happened to him that went badly off of it, he would have looked back on that as like 22, 25, whatever, in around that age. I'm like, I was fucking weirdo. Gimp.
They also found many Stephen King books. And that was a big no-no, because Stephen wrote about the devil, spirits and all them bad things.
Of course.
Of course. And due to their findings, they drove Damien back to juvie. You're going to laugh at this. And honestly... tried to get him to perform black magic in a juvenile fucking detention centre cell.
Oh, get out of my fucking life. You're kidding me.
They drove him to juvie to show him black magic.
Okay, right. There's something like somewhat sad about a... How old is he here? 15,
no,
16, 17?
No, Damien would have been like 17 now, 18 the time of the murders.
Right, so 17 he is at the moment. Whatever about this kid being like, oh, I'm a vampire, and maybe kind of slightly believes he might have some dark mystical magical powers. These are grown ass men with government funded jobs, and they're fully believing that this poor little kid is a fucking witch. Get
and they're in their
away
30s.
From me. Like, climb Dig a grave, climb into it, and stop wasting fucking space on the earth and do the world a favour.
You know the SpongeBob
gift
when he
death.
Gets into the hole and just scoops the dirt over himself?
Yeah. 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 Just do that. Thank you. Full stop.
Fucking
the
exactly.
End.
Damien was being a bit of a dick. And like I said earlier on, he would later admit to, I didn't do myself any favours, because he would constantly give them smart answers anytime they asked a question. So,
like a
he
teenager.
Told Jerry and Steve he couldn't perform black magic because he needed a baby to sacrifice first. And Jerry
took this very seriously.
And he then drove Damien to a psychiatric hospital because of it. Like,
oh, for fuck's sake.
He'd be brought to this psychiatric hospital in Little Rock, Arkansas on June 1st, 1992. So, like, we've just been saying this constantly throughout. Like, this sounds fucking ridiculous to all of us. Like, absolute lunacy. But Bible Belt America, during the Satanic Panic, again, it was anything but fucking lunacy.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So Damien said that the institution, or hospital, in quotes, he went to was very abusive. It was the type of place that would rather beat the problem out of you instead of trying to rehabilitate you. And while in hospital, Damien said he was he said he was diagnosed with depression, but by his own admission, he was only depressed because he was being locked up for no fucking reason and was being hounded, and he was stayed there for a month. So when he was released, his mother actually moved him back down to Oregon, to Damien's biological father. The 200 miles didn't deter Jerry or Steve, and their torments followed Damien all the way to fucking Oregon. And Jerry had taken upon himself to... They actually contacted the juvenile detention center in Oregon to warn them about Damien. They warned them about Damien's threat of murder. Do you remember the time he was going to like burn down the girlfriend's fucking house? The child sacrifice.
Oh, come on, look.
And his satanic behavior. And because Damien, because he was out on probation now at this point, he had made a 2-minute phone call to Dina back in Arkansas. And he was in breach of his parole, much to Jerry's delight. And he was dragged right back to fucking juvie.
But when he was released,
his mom was like, fuck it, we're just going to go back to Arkansas. At least it's our own people there. Like, it was their own home, like in their own trailer park. They're following us to fucking Oregon anyway, so what's the point? We'll just go back because they're going to follow them wherever they go. And once Damien had settled back in Arkansas, Jerry and Steve were back on his case. They cornered him while he was visiting Jason Baldwin. And the four of them ended up in a screaming match on the property of Jason's trailer. So it was best friend versus fucking best friend. Saying things like, I know you're trying to start a satanic cult. And they were like, no, we're not, you fucking weirdos. And this went on for ages. Jerry and Steve revealed that they had 6 members on their satanic cult list. All consisted of teenagers. So I don't know how adults could escape fucking satanic worship, but look. Damien and Jason were added to the said shit list due to their run-ins with the law and how they chose to dress. And do you remember when I told you you want to know how Jesse Miss Kelly made the Satanist list? Because, and I quote, he has spiked hair and stuff. That was the only fucking reason.
That's a quote.
Verbatim. What was the stuff?
That's every lad in Ennis. They're gone. That's it. Every 14-year-old lad Ennis is gone.
So, yeah, we're going back to May 5th, 1993, when the bodies of Christopher, Michael and Stevie were found. And when it comes to a death of a child, everybody knows. Somebody related to the child, be it a parent, a guardian, somebody related to the family or a family friend, is immediately looked at first. And they're questioned first. And they're questioned extensively. But in this case, the parents were barely questioned and none of the interviews were recorded. Not one of the interviews were recorded. So it was more so of an informal fucking chat about their fucking child's death. The only parent the police half, and I mean half, focused on was Christopher Byers' stepdad, Mark Byers. Both of Christopher's parents were small-time drug dealers and Mark had a bit of a violent streak. And for this violent streak, he was on antipsychotics. But this would actually be used against him because being on prescription medication was heavily stigmatized at the time. And Mark also suffered from like weed addiction, alcohol addiction, and he had a brain tumor. All of these can alter both memory and behavior. And a knife belonging to Mark would be found behind one of his sheds that had human blood on it. And when questioned about it, Mark said he was unsure, but it's possible that he nicked himself on the blade as it was quite sharp. But a lot of people think as well, because he was a small-time drug dealer, could have been a retaliation murder for something that had went wrong, because Christopher was the one that was marked up the worst.
Right.
Okay.
Yes,
true. There's a shitty theory about a restaurant called Mr. Bojangles where like, this doesn't make fucking any sense at all. An employee there, I stumbled upon a bathroom that had a black man in it, and he was bleeding profusely, and they were like, this happened in around the time of the murder, so they're like, this could be connected. Wasn't fucking connected at all. This theory was bullshit straight away.
Because he was black.
There you are.
Yeah, okay.
Chief Inspector Gary Glitchell would be assigned the case, and to him there was only 3 possible theories. 1, somebody the kids knew, most likely. 2, a stranger, possible but not likely. Or 3, satanic cult, so the better story. And he was literally taking stabs in the fucking dark. So he was at the start. He had two theories outside of the cult. The first being American soldiers. So somebody had pointed out to him that during Vietnam, captured American soldiers would actually be hogtied like the boys had been. So he looked into any captured Viet vets with his cut off. And they also checked out a guy that had performed a sex change operation without a license.
Wait, what? Wait, slow down there for a second, Lizzie. You fucking skip past there. Was that a thing that would happen regularly? They'd be hogtied, they'd have their bits cut off.
No, they weren't all, like, they didn't have, like, not all of them had stuff done to their bits. It was just that, like, any captured ones, when they were in captivity, they were hogtied. Because you can't move in a hogtie. But he was decided to check out because Christopher's genitals were mutilated. That he'd look into any ones that, like...
Sometimes it did happen that they had their bits cut off as well.
Yeah, so he looked into that. And the second, like I was saying, there was a fella that performed a sex change operation without a license. If you're performing a sex change operation, you're helping somebody out that's trans. You're not mutilating the genitals of a little kid. So I think they figured that very much out for themselves, and it was scrapped as soon as it was fucking taught up.
I can see how they kind of tried to go there in the sense of, like, maybe they were trying to get practice on doing it.
No, it just doesn't fit. Because then what, like, the other two were like, why didn't you do it to them? Why is it just Christopher? For whatever reason, the medical examiners didn't immediately give the police the fucking autopsy results after it was performed. So Gary Glitchell was conducting interviews with no knowledge of the kit or the cause of death.
Oh my god!
No gritty details, and had no line of questioning whatsoever. So any details he knew about the case, he was going off what he was told. And we all know how shit like that happens. Either details get lost, muddled, or outright fucking made up.
I'm sorry, did we not all pay Chinese whispers
Chinese
since we were...
Chinese whispers is not... Yep. Thank you. That's not a police tactic. And
even, like, fair enough, like, have a report that you pass around to everyone, but not like a... Kiva, tell Lizzie there now everything that happened, and I'm expected to fucking remember everything that happened. Like,
and given the heinous details of the crime, it was given nationwide attention, obviously, and the American people were desperate for an answer, and many highly suspected it was the work of Satanists. And you know, when something's given, it's a high profile case, the pressure is being put on the cop massively, because, like, this is this should never fucking happen, this needs to get solved now. They're gonna rush this so bad. It's
The first suspect that seems likely is done. That's it.
Exactly.
Right or wrong,
so
that's the one.
Detective Don Bray joins the case. And he just so happens to be good friends with dick shit Jerry fucking Driver, that had put it into Don's ear that Damien, Jason and Jesse were more than likely the killers. And Don took his word for it because, in his opinion, Jerry was the most informed on the occult because he had attended a lecture exactly one time. So he's an old fucking expert in the occult.
Am I an expert on the universe because I've watched a Netflix documentary about it? No,
I'm highly educated in tigers because I watched a TikTok on one.
Quiva's now a specialist and can testify in court against anybody with cruelty to tigers. There you are, Quiva. A pastor had also confided in Don that three kids from his trailer park were dabbling in devil worship. One even had 666 written on a book. Who was that fucking kid? Fucking Damien again. And from here on out, the West Memphis Three became the sole suspects in the Robin Hood Hills murder. So on May 6th, 1993, exactly 24 hours after the bodies were found, Damien was dragged in for questioning by Steve Jones. And not one second of that interrogation was recorded. Not one fucking second of it. On May 8th,
of course,
the police showed up to Jason Baldwin's trailer. He had no lawyer or parent present. And he was only 16 at the time. He was the youngest of them all. And he was grilled on his fucking property about a triple child murder in view of all of his neighbours. And neither of the two boys took it seriously at all. They were under the assumption that they'd nothing to worry about. So they, mostly fucking Damien, gave them smart answers all the time to any question that they were being asked. And during his second interview, that was partially recorded, very, very partially, he was like, oh yeah, it was a total thrill kill. The destroying of the penis was a whole symbolism thing. And he said that he couldn't care less if the murderers were caught or not. So that was the most dickhead thing he could have fucking said. But he was playing into the trope that they were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only this part, really, that was recorded.
Of course.
That's intentional as well.
100%. He said that the killers probably lit candles, read Anton LaVey and Stephen King. And this was their way, or this was his way of fucking with the police, like, let's be honest. And he was playing straight into their narrative. And how exactly could Damien have known that the genitals were mutilated? Who was there at the scene and who conducted his first interview that wasn't fucking recorded? Steve Jones.
Fucking Steve!
Yeah. And all of this recording would be later used against him. Because they were like, oh, well, it's only something the killer would have known. No, it's not.
Not if it was fed to him.
Yeah, exactly. So Damien agreed and willingly gave hair and blood samples and took a polygraph test, even though polygraph tests aren't admissible in court. He still agreed to take one anyway. Yeah.
Mm.
No records of any tests were kept except one single page that indicated that his polygraph test showed there was some deception. Not even what the question was asked that indicated what the deception yeah. could have been. No questions that were asked.
It literally
asked
could have been, they asked him, like, are you a virgin? He was like, no. When he very much was. Like, that's your deception right yeah. there. Like, that means nothing.
Nothing. Dina Holcomb was also dragged in for a polygraph test to testify that the night of the murders, Damien had mud on his jeans, but no blood. So how could the boy's brains have been caved in for him to have, yeah, mud on his jeans, but no blood? And considering the lacerations.
Not a single splatter.
No, not one single thing, just mud. We're now going to be taking a look at Miss fucking Vicky Hutchinson, a 32-year-old waitress who played an absolutely massive role in these boys' convictions. On May 6th, so the day after the murders, Vicky was dragged down to the station because she was suspected of committing fraud. She was a single mother and had no one to mind her kid, so she brought 8-year-old Aaron Hutchinson along with her. Aaron was 8, the boys were 8. Presumably they were in the same grade, so he was asked, did you see anything unusual about the boys, like after school or anything? And Aaron told his mum that Christopher and Michael, when they had left school, he seen a black man picking them up in a red car, or in a maroon car, sorry. This was a blatant lie, as the boys had been seen at home and after school, hours after they had finished. Sure, they had their bikes, they cycled to and from school. And that's where people thought the Mr. Bojangles thing kind of tied in, because of the man that was bathing in the bathroom. The fella that they
I was going to
up.
Say, was she a waitress at the same restaurant?
I don't
think... That the man was seen
I
in the bathroom?
I don't think so. I could be wrong,
no,
but I'm not
okay.
sure. So a week following the murders, Detective Don Bray asked Vicky if she witnessed or heard anything about satanic cult activities happening in the area. She admits herself she hadn't personally seen or heard anything, but there were rumours and whispers circling that kids from her trailer park were dabbling in it. There was also a lot of reward money on the table to find the people that had committed these murders. So Vicky offered her services. She would play undercover detective to see if she could find proof of said cult activities. And despite having no fucking police training or any training at all, Vicky was given permission. Don Bray showed Vicky Jerry Driver's shit list, and she was familiar with exactly one name on that list, Jesse Miss Kelly. And this is how he's bought into it, because Jesse used to babysit Aaron all the time because they were next door neighbours practically. So she went on her bullshit covert mission to spy on said triple child murders. And I could not have put that in more heavier quotes if I tried. It's just so mad. And Vicky had asked Jesse if she could introduce her to Damien. But Jesse didn't know Damien. He was fucking scared of him because Damien was weird. Jesse didn't want that and got to do him.
Yeah.
And he was confused. Like, why the fuck does a 32-year-old woman have an interest in dating an 18-year-old in high school?
Yeah.
Like, it's weird.
All right, Miss Pedo, like.
Thank you. But nevertheless, look, he babysat her kid. He trusted her and he agreed to introduce her to the pair. Jesse begrudgingly went up to Damien and was like, look, this one, she lives in my trailer park. She finds really good looking. She's good looking. Do you want to meet? Damien agreed. So Vicky,
of course,
yeah, of course, like, you're an 18-year-old kid and this older woman coming up to you, like, you know,
it is literally every 18-year-old boy's wet dream for a single mother to be like, ooh, you want to do it?
Exactly. Do you know, it could not be any more stereotypical if you tried. Like, it's a joke.
No, it couldn't. It is the start of a bad porno. Like,
absolutely. So Vicky planned to seduce Damien, but obviously without sex, and eventually gain his trust and gain an invitation to the satanic sex coven. So in an effort to play the part, to make herself seem spooky, she scattered satanic books around her trailer. Like. So according to Jesse, this was Damien and Vicky's first and only interaction, and it lasted 15 minutes. Because then Damien's man showed up and collected him. But Vicky claims that on May 19th, Damien collected Vicky in a red Ford, or a red Ford Escort, and Jesse was sitting in the backseat. Jesse would not have been sitting in the backseat because one of the two weren't fucking friends in the first place. But they took her to a secluded part of the woods where they met 10 teenagers that went by nicknames such as Lucifer, Snake, and Spider.
What is this, Riverdale?
Honest to God. You could not write this. Oh, no, you could. A terrible fucking teen drama, you could write this. But no, this is real life, unfortunately.
Yep.
So their arms and faces were painted black. They were bollock naked and dancing around a fire, all touching each other's bits and stuff. And this was too much for Vicky's Christian eyes.
Ew, that would look so scary in the dark.
Tell me that was
You'd
a
look like a headless, armless, just body. Like torso and legs.
You would.
Yeah.
This was too much for her Christian eyes. And she wanted to leave. And Damien was, you know, even though a triple child murder, he was very obliging. And he brought her home. But Jesse stayed for the orgy.
Nice.
Now, there's exactly... There's two main issues with all of this. Nobody related to Damien or even Damien himself had a red Ford Escort. And Damien couldn't even drive. It was something that he was known for. He had tried, he had failed. Like myself, and people were like, oh, when are you going to drive? He's like, oh, I can't fucking do it. Like, it was actually a thing that he was known for and nearly considered it a personality trait as the fact that he could not drive. But you know, this made absolutely no difference to Vicky because she would later testify in court that this event actually happened. Yeah.
Cool. Good job, Vicky.
And even though, I'll get to it later on, but she said that she had to do it because...
Money hungry, yeah, exactly.
I don't buy her actual reason.
For money, because you're greedy.
On June 3rd, Detective Brian Ridge and Gary Glitchell started the interrogation with Jesse Miscalley. He was questioned alone, without a parent or a lawyer present. Jesse's father had given him permission to go with the police, but not for him to be interrogated under any circumstance. He was questioned for 12 hours straight, no breaks.
Very illegal.
And only 48 minutes out of that 12 hour were recorded. And during this time, he confessed to the murder of Christopher Byers, Michael Moore, and Stevie Branch.
Oh, Jesse.
So Jesse Miscalley's confession would be the final nail in the coffin in the conviction of the West Memphis Three. They had him. They completely broke him fucking down. They completely broke him down.
Of course.
And given as well how he had the mental age of an 8 to 9 year old, that wasn't going to be fucking hard.
Yeah, like he wasn't able
to. It's how they broke down the simple cousin for making a murderer. Yeah, it's,
exactly.
They don't find it hard to do for, like, someone who...
They don't have mental capacity to understand that these men aren't going to help you. Like, they're constantly like, listen, man, if you just tell us what happened, we're going to help you. Yeah. And then they're going to lead them because they're not being recorded, so there's no proof that they led them to what they're about to say. And it's like, if you just tell us that you cut the boy's genitals, didn't you? And he's going to be like, yeah, I did. That's what they want to hear. I can go home tonight if I tell them that.
And, like, he was probably sleep-deprived. He had no break. So this was 12 hours of fucking questioning.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's probably starving, dehydrated. So you're going to be
petrified.
Exactly, like, you're not going to be in a stable frame of mind to be able to give an actual confession.
Not at all.
Like, complete police coercion. Or how the fuck do you say that word? That, yep. Anyway. Yeah.
Coercion.
Like, it's ridiculous. I have some examples, and I mean only some examples, of the 48 minutes of any of the questions that were being asked. You can look them up. If you literally just type in Jesse Miscalley confession, the very first thing that comes up. Now, it's not a secure site, so just be careful. But it has the transcripts of it. Just thought I'd give a warning.
Make sure your antivirus is on.
So, Detective Brian Ridge, Gary Glitchell. You received a phone call, correct? Jesse. Yes. Ridge. Who?
Leading the witness.
Who gave you the phone call? Jesse, Jason Baldwin. Now, this was not at all possible because the night of the murder, Jesse was actually staying at a friend's who didn't have a phone. So it wouldn't be possible for him to access one. Remember that. Ridge.
Right. Cool. Why do we care about evidence?
No, not at all. Or could I even have asked the person he was staying in the house with, did Jesse pop out for a phone call? Do you actually have a landline? None of these things were asked because these are what? Professionals. Ridge.
Not important.
What? What did he want? Jesse. Now, Jason wanted to go to West Memphis, but I didn't really want to go. I had stuff to do, but then all three of us ended up going. Ridge. When did you go? Jesse. 9 o'clock in the morning. But this was not at all possible because the boys were all seen in school that day because their school starts at 8 o'clock and they were seen at school for the entire fucking day. And the detective didn't even ask Jesse where the boys were found. He told them. And then he showed them pictures of the three boys. And he got the boys confused, didn't know who they were. He said, I saw Damien hit this one. And then he hit this one real bad. And then he started screwing this one and stuff. And then he fucking stopped, right? A medical examiner had said that there wasn't any evidence whatsoever that the boys had been raped or sodomized. Two boys did show anal dilation, but there was no tearing, and it was due to them being in the water. Not and got, like, they weren't...
Yeah, okay. It was the thing we discovered about when you drown.
Yeah, exactly. It prolapses. Yeah, that's exactly what had happened. Yeah. And it only happened to two. And he...
So they stopped him. They cut him off because he admitted to a rape that never happened.
There you go.
Yeah.
He was trying to say that there was a violent struggle, but just remember this when we get to the actual medical examiner's report. Like, that he was getting the boys confused. He changed the story at least 7 times and would backtrack then constantly. He said that they hit them with their fists, and he's like, oh, did you use anything to beat them? And he was like, yeah, a stick. And we choked Christopher with a stick. A medical examiner said from the impressions of the skull, it wasn't consistent with fists or sticks. That was half lunar shape, more consistent with a flashlight. So nothing that he had said lined up with scientific fact.
And was there any sort of
making it all up?
Damage to the windpipe or nope. any sort of neck contusions or nope. No, of course. Okay, so there was no strangulation involved either. Lovely.
None at fucking all. And a few hours later, Jesse's confession on June 3rd, Damien Eccles and Jason Baldwin were arrested. On June 4th, Detective Gary Glitchell holds a press conference to announce the arrest of Damien and Jason and Jesse. And when a reporter asked him how confident he was that the three would be found guilty, his response, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say 11. Like, you cocky cunt. Just shut up. These are three kids that have, like, there's no proof.
Just because you can't please your wife with your flaccid dick, this is how you get your fucking jollies. Mm-hmm. I hate this cunt so fucking much.
And you're about to hate them even more. So, because I'm about to tell you, any evidence that was collected from the crime scene or off the boys' bodies were stored in paper bags that had come from a supermarket that still had the supermarket logo attached onto the bag, and they were dumped on a shelf. So none of this, not one of it, was looked after properly or stored properly. Anything, like, I mean, the not, like, the laces that the boys were tied up with were all dumped in a fucking paper bag and dumped on a shelf. Not sealed, nothing. Wrap your head around that. And
no preservation.
No, and they were coming.
So all evidence is destroyed now, essentially.
100%. Or fucking tampered with. Like, they're storing it in bags. Do you trust these cunts to wear gloves? No.
No.
And because they left the boys on the riverbank for 2 hours, that they were traipsing up and down said crime scene, they had not one of it cornered off. Because they decided to go look for evidence themselves before waiting for the medical examiner and doing the procedure properly. So anything that they could have found, like potential footprints, they were traipsing on them. So anything like that could have been destroyed, like, they could have got shoe impressions, anything.
But even little things that might have been dropped onto the ground, like that would have been stepped on and then squashed into the mud.
Like hairs. Hairs, exactly. All fucking gone away because of their lack of fucking professionalism is ridiculous.
The negligence is astounding. It's actually
a joke.
I have whiplash from how bad it is.
A bona fide fucking joke. On June 7th, a state judge appoints the boys their lawyers and that would represent them in court. On June 9th, the police interviewed 8-year-old Aaron Hutchinson again, who now claims that he never actually did see a black man in a maroon car pick the boys up, but he actually had witnessed the murders happen, which is a complete fucking contradiction of what he previously said.
That doesn't even make sense.
Because as an 8-year-old boy, if he witnessed the murders happen, he would have been murdered too.
You're the same age demographic if the person had a type.
If nothing else about it made fuck all sense, bar that, that is enough to be like, no didn't exactly. happen.
On August 4th, 1993, a judge decided that Jesse would actually be tried separately to Jason and Damien due to the Burton Rule. Now, I'm going to read out to you what the Burton Rule is. So the Burton error refers to the violation of a criminal defendant's constitutional rights of confrontation by admitting into evidence a non-testifying co-defendant's confession that implicates both of them. So where the statement is not admissible against the defendant under any exception to the hearsay rule. So because he was the one that confessed and involved Damien and Jason, that's why he was tried separately. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because Damien and Jason hadn't admitted to anything, that's why they were tried separately.
Mm-hmm.
And on...
That makes sense,
On June 26, 1994, Jesse trials begin, so whole, like nearly a year after. So during Jesse's trial, Richard Offshay, an expert in false confessions, police coercion, and a professor of sociology at UC Berkeley, took the stand in Jesse's defence. He said that the very, very brief 48-minute of Jesse's confession was a classic example of police coercion. And despite a complete lack of evidence, expert opinion, and no actual clear fucking evidence, very much clear evidence that there was police misconduct. On February 5th, 1994, Jesse Miskelly was found guilty on one count of first-degree murder, 2 counts of murder in the second degree, and he was sentenced to life in prison plus an additional 40 years. And this is when the first documentary of Paradise Lost premiered, because they started, like, this national attention, like, gained interest straight away. So there was an author that wrote a book about it. This is the lady that ended up making Paradise Lost, but she was following this to the letter of the fucking T, and in complete defense of these boys. Like, she, like all of us, are completely fucking astounded as to how this was allowed to happen.
A dog with a mallet up its hole could see that this is not the fucking case. Yep. These are not the fucking suspects. How do you take a case with 3 victims and turn it into 6? Tell me that. How do you do that and fucking sleep at night?
It's ridiculous.
I really don't get it, like, how you can do these things and not have, like, the worst insomnia.
And on February 18th, he's asked to testify against Damien and Jason in court, but he refuses because he said his initial confession wasn't true. And on February 19th, then, Damien and Jason's trial began. But Jesse had since changed his mind, and he said, I'll go testify, because he was told that if he did, his girlfriend could come and visit him when he was in prison. So as soon as that was promised to him, aww, he was like, yep, I'll go confess about how they murdered and tortured and raped these boys. When none of it was fucking true.
They're so playing bad. Him so yeah. bad, like...
Because it's easy to fucking yeah. manipulate the one that, let's face it, isn't the fucking brightest spark. And they already yeah. had him worn down so much, doesn't. And he was already found guilty, so what the fuck does it change to him?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's
he's just
thing,
trying
like.
To get some benefit exactly. out of it now at this point. And, like, you can't blame him
no,
for that.
Because I can see where he's like, well, I'm fucked.
No.
He doesn't even know these boys yeah. as well, but it's like, well, at least I can have some, like, semblance of normalcy if I can see my girlfriend.
Yeah, if I can... speculate here, I would imagine that the police coerced him into thinking that it was Damien and Jason that put him in the position that he was in. So yeah. they kind of gave him that kind of block against them then, where it was like, well, fuck these guys, they're the yeah. reason I'm in prison, so I'll do anything against them.
Exactly,
now.
Like, not 100% could have...
Complete no, speculation, yeah. but I can't
no,
think
but
I'm
like,
wrong.
It is, it's something worth fucking thinking about. And prosecutor mm-hmm. John Fogelman first spoke and addressed the jury. He said, through scientific evidence and statements of their own defendants will prove that they caused the death of these three boys. John Fogelman is just a fucking dickhead, and I know he's just doing his fucking job, but man, how can you represent these families who have lost their fucking kids with your whole heart and your whole chest and try to accuse these boys of a murder when you know yourself that there's no evidence? Because you would have had to have a pre-trial where the yep. prosecutors and the defendants show all the evidence that they have together before a grand fucking jury.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's a joke.
Tell me where there was DNA found. Oh, tell me where there was...
There like, wasn't.
A murder weapon found. Tell me where the boys had fucking marks on their hands from causing physical beatings to these kids, if you're trying to say that they were beaten, even though the evidence goes against yeah. that. Give me something. Give me fucking something. So don't you dare call in the name of fucking science yeah. if you've nothing to back exactly. it up with.
Yeah. The only evidence they have is... coercion of a wit of mm-hmm. like yeah. a witness, we'll say, and the fact that they dress funny and yeah. listen to weird music.
Speculation and a false confession. Yeah. That's what
that
you have.
That led to somebody that yeah. we've seen so far.
Nothing.
Life in prison plus 40 fucking years. So Paul Ford, Jason Baldwin's lawyer, argued that Jason had only been 16 at the time of the murders. Jason was a very caring boy, and he practically reared his two younger brothers that were kind of in around the same age as the two boys. So his mom was a single mom. She would work, I think, two jobs to try and provide for them. So Jason would get up in the morning, he'd get the kids ready for school, and then when his mom was coming home to pass out to go to sleep, he'd have a coffee waiting for her when she woke up. Like, he was such a kind, caring boy, and they're trying to eliminate after all of that. Yeah, and he said, oh. you'll see that this evidence that they have manipulated and distorted in order to make the pieces of the puzzle that they want to build fit together, and I could not agree with anything more in my fucking life.
Yeah, it's literally like when you're getting sick of doing a fucking jigsaw.
Start baiting it into it. Yeah.
Start mm-hmm. trying to squash the pieces into place, and they clearly don't fit, like.
So Scott Davidson, Damien Eccles' lawyer, first statement to the court was, he's not the all-American boy. He's kind of weird. He's not the same as maybe you and I might be. But I think you'll also see that there's simply no evidence that he murdered those three kids. I mean, yeah, point out the fact that he is weird, and that's why people are basically accusing him. But don't just go like, kid's fucking weird, man.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
I feel like it was like, I can see what he was trying to do.
Yeah, it was like good intentions, but phrased completely the wrong way.
Completely wrong.
Yeah.
So their trial started the exact same as Jesse's. The parents of Christopher, Michael and Stevie took to the stand to describe the boys, where they were last seen, what they were last wearing, and more so about their sweet little personalities. The detectives and Steve Jones, along with that other dick jury driver, took the stand to recount all the evidence they found, how they found the bodies, and every shitty fucking comment that Damien had ever made to the police would be bought up and used against him.
Oh,
every
you know.
Single one. Even about him practicing magic, even like, haha, yeah, I practice magic in my spare time. I drink blood. Stupid shit like that. And Damien's ex-girlfriend, well, now ex, Dina, was also brought to the stand to testify that Damien wore all black and sometimes carried a little knife in his trench coat pocket. But I'm sorry. Whatever about him, like, wearing black is just completely fucking stupid. But given how he was in a notoriously poor area, he was getting beat on the whole time, he had two gimps following mm-hmm. him around the whole time, he would have felt under threat. Of course he's going to carry a knife, and
of
yeah, he's
course
going to carry
he's carrying a knife,
he's going to seem fucking metal, do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Exactly.
And that was used against him. And prosecutor John Fogelman also urged the judge to note that on May 5th, the night the boys were murdered, that there was a full moon, and that they had to take that into consideration because the full moon was heavily used with satanic worship. Imagine a prosecutor saying that with his law degree and his education in a fucking court of law.
Your Honour, I would like you to know that Jupiter was in retrograde, and for
so
like for a Pisces, that's like really, really dangerous. So You're just gonna have to take that into account, okay? Take my word for it.
Do you know what? That's exactly how I want to picture that this happened. So Dr. Dale Griffiths, a cult, heavy quote, expert from Ohio, was brought in front of a jury, and he was asked if the number 3 had any significance due to satanic beliefs because of the 3 boys, said 3 killers. But he said it's one of the most powerful numbers in the practice of satanic belief, and gave exactly no examples. But during cross-examination, when asked if number 3 had any significance in the Christian religion, his response was, I can't make that judgment. And I can't make that statement. And the first things I can fucking think of.
The Holy Trinity.
The 3 wise men. And the 3 gifts. He couldn't rattle that off the top of his head. But what are the examples to how it was with satanic worship? Can you fucking explain that to me?
The whole point of 3 being a thing with demons and ghosts and all of that shit is a mockery of the Holy Trinity.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so how the fuck thing that was to mock it.
It's because they know enough about these things to make like wrong assumptions. That's the problem. They know just enough to be so ridiculously wrong.
Well, that sounds right, but that's a bit ridiculous. I think I've even said this before, but well, it must be true then, because I know certain facts that he's saying are true, and because you're saying it with such fucking confidence.
It's what we said about the conspiracy. It was the conspiracy episode. It's when you mix bullshit with fact, you confuse the brain and you're like, well, it has to be true then.
And Griffiths also said that the blood from the wounds is also crucial. And this is going to be a full quote for him because he fucking stops himself. He said, the blood is the life force, and usually they will take, they prefer to have a child that is young, very young. And the younger, the more innocent, the better the life force.
So
when medical examiner Frank Peretti took the stand, he was handed a knife, not wrapped in anything. And
here, have a knife.
He was found behind Damien's trailer. And he was asked that if this blade could have caused the laceration in the boy's body, particularly Christopher Byers. Peretti agreed that this knife could have been used as it was a serrated blade, but it was equally comparable to the knife belonging to Mark Byers that had blood on it. He was like, it's a serrated blade. Of course it could have caused these wounds. So he wasn't like...
Everyone has a serrated blade.
Exactly.
I have like 6 in my kitchen, you know, like...
It's ridiculous.
Yep.
Now, on to the autopsy. Now, lads, I'm not being funny, but I actually haven't got the stomach or the will to tell you exactly what happened to Christopher. Because it's so fucking upset, and it's not even... Like, actually makes me upset. It's horrible. Look it up if you want, but you won't be hearing it from me. Straight up. All you need to know is that he was alive for the entire mutilation, but I'm not saying anything else that had happened to him because I can't. It actually makes me upset.
So can I just ask, because I've been waiting to get to this point, is because of the prolapsed anuses, which not a sentence I enjoy saying either, were they drowned? They didn't...
Yeah, they were alive when they were...
Die from the blunt force trauma. Well... Yeah, I thought as much. I figured as much from that.
It was him and kind of...
But it was only 2.
Yeah, because Michael had water in his lung, but Stevie didn't. Mm-hmm. So it was like the initial blow of, was it the torch, flashlight, who knows, had hit him. It seems like that's what had actually killed him, but the other 2 were alive when they were placed in the water.
So 2 drowned, or 2 died of drowning and the other died of blunt force trauma.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Like Christopher, I'd say, was going to die of blood loss anyway. Then with the head caved in, and I'd say Michael would have died eventually from the head trauma, but drowning was obviously a lot quicker.
It was speeded it up,
And all of this was in complete contradiction to what Jesse had said during his interrogation. Like, all of it, absolutely all of it. But yeah, this was like his fucking confession was still deemed in court that he gave that, knowing his rights. Because Jesse actually had said, I forgot to fucking say this, that his rights were read to him, but he actually didn't understand what the Miranda rights were. So he didn't understand them as they were being read to him. But according to the judge, given his statement and his confession, that he understood his rights perfectly. So that his confession could be used in court against him.
Where are the psychologists? Where are the people that are supposed to come in and stand up for them and say that they're not fit to stand trial? That they...
Where were kids? Like, I know Damien was 18, but man, you're 18 years old, you're still a fucking kid.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Especially in the States, if you're not old enough to drink, you're not old enough to defend yourself in court.
Exactly. Next to take the stand would be 16-year-old Michael Carson. And he was actually once Jason's juvie cellmate. And he said prior to the murders, Jason had mentioned, he had dismembered kids and shit with satanic cults and the satanic activities. And Michael decided to testify against Jason because once he saw the kids' parents on the TV, he felt heartbroken. I have a soft heart. Complete fucking, like, Jason very well could have said this. He could have been a bit of a shithead like Damien, you know. Just trying to, like, rile people or get under their skin or anything like that. So, he's going to say some weird shit. But And for you then to come and testify that against him in court. Like, look, I'm not saying Michael didn't believe wholeheartedly that the boys did this or that they didn't, but just from something that someone could have said.
And again, it's hearsay, so that shouldn't be admissible in court regardless.
Exactly.
Like, I know there's character witnesses and stuff, but someone like that, that's just an acquaintance, should not be brought in as a character witness. So
no, like, you can't. That's like, if you don't know someone well enough, like, a character witness is like,
yeah, exactly,
someone who knows you well, but that isn't like.
So it's bullshit, during the trial, Damien said he didn't even know who the boys were, that he'd only seen them on TV. And when asked how he felt about being charged with fucking triple child murder, he replied, sometimes angry, sometimes sad, sometimes scared. Like, that is, it's so fucking sad.
These are kids. They're kids.
They're kids. Yep, it's there. I get upset. So on March 18th, 1994, Damien Eccles, Jason Baldwin were both found guilty of capital murder. The victims' families cheered and hugged in court, while Jason seemed to cry, while Damien showed little emotion at all because he couldn't fucking wrap his head around, how is this happening?
No, of course not.
Jason just completely broke down. Because then people were like, oh, he showed lack of emotion in court. That means he's guilty. Like, no, you dumb fuck. Like, he is bewildered.
Exactly.
No, it's shock. Like, people are in shock. Like, I probably wouldn't react like that. I would just, you'd just be in shock
and
because you wouldn't.
And they didn't even know their sentencing. So all they know that they were found guilty. And just as well, capital punishment was legal in Arkansas at the time. So they had the death penalty. So obviously, that's in their fucking mind. That, oh, well, this could happen to me. So what are you to think? Like, you're gonna cry or you're
that's,
not
I'd
going
imagine
to
that's what Damien thought.
Yeah, 100%.
Was he just stood there and he just froze and thought, this is it. This is how I die.
Yeah, exactly. All for making comments and for how he dressed.
Just for trying to be a bit of a spooky boy, like. How do you go from pretending to be a bit of a spook to being accused of child murder?
Terry Hobbs, Stevie Branch's stepfather, hoped that he would get the death penalty, the two boys. And he only wished that he could have 10 minutes alone with them to do exactly what they did to the two boys. And during the documentary for Paradise Lost, now the second part of that heavily indicated that Mark Byers was the person that had killed the three boys. And Damien Eccles is very much of the opinion as well that it was Mark that had killed them. So the second part of that documentary is all about Mark. And Mark, in that documentary, also had a shooting range. And he had a whole heap of watermelon set up and he said, this one's Damien, shoot at it. And then later on when the boys, spoiler alert, when they were released, he said he felt so fucking bad for publicly doing that then, because the boys are going to have seen that he wished death upon them when they hadn't done anything.
Sorry for interrupting you again. No. Like, I can't blame the reaction of the people. That I won't blame. Because if you're told by a jury of your peers, by a Supreme Court justice, all of that, this is them, they did this.
You're going to hear.
Of course you hate them. Of course you fucking do.
About all the horrible things that were actually
I would
done
react
to
the exact same way.
And the thing is as well, is that, like, how much did the people at the time know? Because, like, a lot of this stuff might have come out.
They'd only know what they're being released, which will always be the horrible.
Like, they might have just seen that the police are working really hard to make this, like, make them go down for something they did. Like, the police know they did it, they just don't have hard proof kind of thing.
So, I don't think he should feel overly bad about it. It was shitty because, yes, they were innocent.
And on March 21st, Damien and Jason were handed down their sentences. Jason was given life in prison and Damien was given the death penalty because he was seen to be the one that was the leader of the group. His execution date, May 5th, 1994, because that's the date that the boys had died, was on May 5th, 1993. So Jason was sent to Pine Bluff Penitentiary.
But to set the execution date to a year.
This is how...
Sorry, again,
this
for cutting you off, but a year is so short.
So quick to gather every bit of evidence that you can find that there's no shadow of a doubt that these people are guilty. But within the space of a couple of months, they were already on trial.
Yeah.
It's a blatant joke, so it is.
Yeah, that's very unusual. Yeah. Like, that's just, like, get it over and done with.
And all three boys, at the end of 1994, applied for appeals. All of them were rejected. And thank God Damien's fucking execution date kept on being pushed back. Because
they had to give a stay of execution. They couldn't do it that
fucking
quickly.
So now I'm just going to give you a quick comprehensive timeline of what has followed. So December 23rd, 1996, the Arkansas Supreme Court issues a decision upholding the convictions of Damien Eccles and Jason Baldwin. So they're like, no, they are not under any circumstance going to get out if they appeal this. On June 17th, 1999, Judge Burnett denies a petition for a new trial filed under Arkansas's Rule 37 for Eccles. So basically, Damien had filed something under Rule 37, which basically authorises the court to direct that parties or attorneys who fail to participate in good faith in the discovery and process pay the expenses, including attorney fees, incurred by other parties as a result of the failure. So they were being...
Wait, what?
Yeah, so basically, that
because they failed him, they would have to pay his expenses because they didn't get him off, so... You don't win, you don't pay.
Exactly. But oh, the judge was like, fuck no, that's not happening. And God bless him, while Damien was in prison, he married this lovely lady called Laurie Davis of New York in a Buddhist ceremony performed at the prison.
Okay, big fan.
March 2000, the film Paradise Lost, so part two of the documentary, Revelations, premieres on HBO. And like I said before, heavily suggests that Mark Byers was the actual murderer. On February 2001... Edward Mallett, attorney for Eccles, so this is his new attorney because his old one's been fucking sacked because he didn't do him shit, files a right of error quorum, or a quorum nobis, in the Arkansas Supreme Court, arguing that Eccles should be never tried in 1994 because of his mental condition at the time. So because he was severely depressed when all of this was going on, it was like he should not have been stood trial while he was like...
Yeah.
Like, to everybody else, oh, he was this dark, dark person, but inside he was actually suffering so fucking much because of it. On April 2001, the Arkansas Supreme Court rules that Judge Burnett failed to give sufficient attention to Eccles' argument in his rejection of Damien's rule, the 37 petition. The Supreme Court sends the case back to Judge Burnett for further consideration of the issues presented in the petition. 2002, that fucking terrible film that my mother made me watch, that was made. And this is going to really fuck you off. October 2003, in an interview with Arkansas's Times reporter, Vicky Hutchinson claims that everything she told the police was a lie, and they suggested that the police warned her that if she did not cooperate in their investigation, that she would take the child away from him. Now, I do not find that fucking true at all.
No.
She was getting off on the amount of money that she was getting, and because she was able to play a detective.
Yeah.
I don't buy the fact that they threatened to take Aaron off her whatsoever. No. So the interaction that Jesse had said during his initial confession that their only meeting was for 15 minutes and one time, that was true.
She inserted herself into that situation.
Absolutely. She didn't have to be there. She sniffed out the reward.
Like, no, there was no threat, there was no nothing. Like, she inserted herself into it.
She followed the reward like a truffle pig. That's exactly what happened.
You're not wrong.
Sorry.
Truffle pig.
No, I have no sympathy for any of the cunts that let this shit go down, so... If it seems harsh, let it be harsh, because I'm making no apologies for it.
So, in 2007, when DNA was finally collected from evidence that had been obviously taken from the crime scene, it was tested. None of it is found to match the DNA of Eccles, Baldwin, or Miss Kelly. I hear that the knot used to tie up one of the victims is found to be consistent with Terry Hobbs, stepfather to Stevie Branch. I'm going to get more into that cunt later on.
Oh.
But John Mark Byers told the media that he now believes the three young men that were convicted were innocent. And at a Little Rock Valley, Dixie Chick singer Natalie Maines implies that Hobbs was involved in the killing of his boy and the two others. So people start looking to this cunt, and by people I mean very famous celebrities, consisting of Johnny Depp, Winona Ryder, Jack Black, singers for fucking like Metallica and everything, were like, these kids are completely innocent. Like, celebrities are actually speaking out for them, because it's completely stupid as to how this was let go on. Mm-hmm. Still, like, this happened in the 90s and we're now in like late 2000s, and this bollocks is still going on. So on October 29, 2007, papers were filed in a federal court by Eccles' defense lawyers seeking a retrial and his immediate release from prison. The files cited that the DNA evidence linking Terry Hobbs to the crime scene and new statements from Hobbs' now ex-wife presented that this should have been in the original trial, because Hobbs' ex-wife said he used to beat her the fucking whole time and that he had a terrible anger issue. So they're like, why was this never mentioned? So Damien should be granted a retrial. And also presented in the filing, that was new expert testimony that the supposed knife marks on the victims included injuries to Christopher's genitals were in fact the result of animal... Basically, he says that fish and stuff would have like taken chunks out of the kids while they were in the water.
Yeah.
But a lot of, like the other people said, look, no, you can tell it's from a lacerated blade, so that was thrown out, so that was kind of a further reason why Damien wasn't granted a retrial. Let me see. Evidence on July 2008 from Kent Arnold, the jury foreman in Eccles and Baldwin trial, discussed the case with an attorney prior to deliberations and advocated in the jury room for conviction. So he's, you know, the way when you're on a jury, you're not meant to talk about the case with anybody outside of that, because it could be to a mistrial.
Yeah.
The judge...
Yeah, you're not meant to, like, read up about it or anything.
Anything. The judge was going around on lunch breaks and on toilet breaks openly discussing the case. And when asked if he thought that the boys were going to be found guilty. The judge.
Fucking Jesus.
The judge already
Christ.
Had it in him before hearing any of the evidence that these
that's
boys were going to be found
guilty. That's creating a bias.
Yeah, exactly. So that same judge, on the 10th of September 2008, denies their request for a retrial, holding that the DNA evidence produced by the defendants were inconclusive. So that anything that related to Hobbs wasn't admissible. But yeah, Jesse Miss Kelly's false confession was admissible in court. Tell me how. But on November 4th, 2010, so many fucking years after the murders have happened, mm-hmm. the Arkansas Supreme Court orders a trial judge, like a new trial judge, to determine whether the newly discovered DNA evidence or evidence of juror misconduct justifies either a new trial or exoneration of the three defendants. So in early December 2010, David Burnett was elected to Arkansas State Senate. Circuit Judge David Lasser was selected to replace David Burnett and preside in the evidentiary hearings and mandated by the successful plea. I'm having a stroke. My brain is dead.
It's okay.
After weeks of negotiation, on August 19th, 2011, Eccles and Baldwin and Miss Kelly were released from prison as a part of a plea deal, making the hearings ordered by Arkansas Supreme Court unnecessary. The three entered into an unusual Alford plea deals. So the Alford plea deal is a legal mechanism that allows defendants to plead guilty while still asserting their actual innocence in cases where defendants conceded the prosecution have sufficient evidence to secure a conviction. Stephen Braga, an attorney for Ropes and Gray, who took upon Eccles' defence on a pro bono basis beginning in 2009, negotiated the plea deal with the prosecutors. So under the new deal, Judge David Lasser vacated that the previous convictions, including the capital murder convictions of Eccles and Baldwin, and ordered a new trial. Each man then entered an Alford deal to the lesser charges of first and second degree murder while verbally stating that they were innocent. Judge Lasser then sentenced them to serve time, a total of 18 years and 78 days, and they were given each a suspended imposition of a sentence of 10 years. But they already had served all that time behind bars, so he had to pass the sentence, but they were allowed out.
I was just about to say.
So, but if they reoffended, they can be sent back to prison for 21 years.
I have to ask, was the 18 years...
Yes.
It was 18, you said. Was that from the original...
Yeah, 18 years.
Sentencing?
Arrest.
So yeah. It wasn't like 18 years now from 2010. Okay, okay.
So, John E. Douglas, who I'm sure we all know, infamous former longtime FBI agent that started the fucking criminal profiling. He came up, do you remember we would have seen the programme, what's called Mindhunter?
Yeah, yeah.
Him.
Mindhunter.
The real him.
Yeah,
the real said him. That the murders were more, yeah, the real him, more were likely a single murderer intent on degrading and punishing the victims than of a trio of unsophisticated teenagers. Douglas believed that the perpetrator had a violent history and was familiar with the victims and the local geography. Douglas was a formerly FBI unit chief for 25 years, you know, has a bit of fucking experience and well known compared to the gimp cops.
Would be more likely to take his note for it.
He stated in his report for Eccles' legal team that there was no evidence that the murders were linked to satanic rituals and that the post-mortem animal predation could explain the alleged knife injury. So John's kind of the opinion that, look, it could have been fish, but it's still a bit up in the air, like, was it or was it a knife?
It could be a bit of both.
Yes, exactly.
Like, it was originally lacerated, and then because of said lacerations, it made the fish more likely to go for it and thus picked away bits of skin, making it a little bit harder to identify.
But he also was of the opinion that blunt force trauma and drowning were the cause of death for the three boys, and that was definitely for a personal motive. So on August 19th, 2011, they were all released. Like, imagine spending that fucking long in prison.
For something you never fucking did.
For nothing.
Just for being a weirdo.
For nothing. And it took for, like, celebrities to come out and speak out about it, that people started paying attention. Like, the evidence itself should have fucking spoke for it, not the words of Johnny Depp, even though, like, look, him and Damien Eccles are very good friends now at this point, because it's like all the advocating he did for him while he was on fucking death row. It was ridiculous. And they also tried to bring up that, like, this was 4 years after the trial had begun, that, oh, there was teeth marks found on the boy's body, and the defence were like, no, there fucking wasn't. And even if there were, any alleged teeth marks didn't match any three boys. So, Quiva, do you remember you had mentioned there earlier on that hog tying is something that hunters do? Yeah. Terry fucking Hobbs.
Yeah, like, it's not even that they, like, do, but, like, yeah.
No, but it, like, they do with deer and shit like that.
It falls into the profession, yeah.
Yeah, he was a skilled butcher, a hunter, and a military man. And he was in severe financial trouble when all the boys went missing. And in 2007.
Wait, didn't you mention like military
about
as well?
Vietnam vets being tortured and stuff. So yeah, it's. Mm-hmm. I thought the exact same thing, but I was like, I'm not even going to mention it because. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So wait, he's a hunter, he's a butcher, and he's a vet.
Who was extremely fucking violent.
And in personal debt.
In 2007, they identified a hair fragment on Michael Moore's bindings that is consistent with Terry Hobbs. I've already said that, but just hammering it in.
Yep.
He also tried to molest his neighbour when he was 24, Mildred French. She fought him off and because she was terrified that he was going to rape her. Stevie's mam,
which he probably would have,
said on multiple times that he had beat the shit out of her and he shot her brother and actually served 6 months in prison for it. He dealt and smoked weed and
he's a very aggressive man.
And to this day, the case remains unsolved. And that is the
tragic
murder. So
we have a DNA match. We have a violent history.
A motive, we'll say.
We have a motive. Mm-hmm. We have access. Yep. We have knowledge.
Ability and, the ability and means to do it.
But this remains unsolved. We're not even trying. We're not even trying to question
and
this guy.
Do you remember back on my Edward Wayne Edwards series, Quiva, you weren't there for it, but for anybody that has listened to the episode.
Yes!
They thought that he could have done it as well because this cunt was notorious for turning up to crime scenes of supposed victims that he had, and it was in at the graveyard, and it was during Christopher's funeral. There was cameras there and everything, and when the camera was panning around the graveyard, you just seen Edward Wayne Edwards standing at the fucking graveyard. So people were like, oh my god, could have been him, because he had a history of returning to grave, even news reports of things of victims that he allegedly could have killed, inserting himself where he could have done a crime basically. But with my whole heart, Terry fucking Hobbs. And I don't know why it would have been Christopher that got the fucking blunt end of it, but Stevie's face, which would have been his stepson, the left side of his face seemed to be mutilated. So I don't know if it was a case of Christopher putting up more of a fight. So
Christopher drowned, to him. Right?
Christopher was the one that had his genitals destroyed.
Yeah. But he also,
the three boys were eight, weren't they?
They were all best friends.
3 8-year-olds, they were all, I'm assuming they were obviously in the woods and then someone just attacked them while they were there.
It's open to interpretation. People think,
that's the assumption.
They could have been cycling their bikes and that they got led to the woods where it was secluded.
Yeah, someone they knew.
I don't know, I feel like Terry, if it was Terry, I feel like he'd need to have an accomplice because there's no way, not that a grown man couldn't do that to 3 young boys, but more the fact that trying to catch 3 young boys and tie them up without one of them at least getting away.
Right, they could have come and he could have hit them in the head first and then hog tied them.
Yeah.
Or you're 8 years old, he could have taken one of them. All speculation, he could have taken one of them and be like, if you two
and then
move,
the other two went searching.
Yeah.
Either that or he could have been like, if you two move, I'm going to kill him.
Or that,
Yeah. It's so many
you
theories
are,
of
yeah,
what
true.
Could have happened.
Okay. No, I was just trying to say maybe he, but that makes more sense.
But we'll never fucking know because the police traipsed up and down the gully where potential footprints could have been. Where there could have been one or more sets.
There's no way of knowing how it could have been done without a full confession from the actual killer.
Six people lost, 3 young boys lost their lives and then 3 teenage lads lost
and their whole future, because that's going to stick with them. They're always going to be the West Memphis 3. There will always be someone who looks at them and thinks, I think it was them.
And that's fucking horrible. There are so many lives.
Yeah, they lost the future they could have had.
Like fucking Vicky. I honest to God, I do not buy that they threatened to take Aaron off her at all.
No, I'm sorry, I don't.
I don't believe it for a fucking second. And she was just money hungry. She'd already, not just because, she'd been caught doing fraud, but it fucking lines up. How could she sit there?
I can understand being a single mother and being in need of money, but not to the
not
point
so
that
much.
You ruin 3 fucking innocent lives.
And then rob the parents of the murdered boys.
Of any
of
justice.
Of finding answer. Yeah, or getting justice.
But not even that, but having a kid yourself and then going out and making something so much more difficult for 3 young boys, knowing that your kid is
in the same grade as the kids that fucking died.
Yeah.
Your kid is going to be soon going to be one of the same age as one of the young
accused.
Lads who's falsely accused.
She was in
what if that's your
that
son
situation exactly
in the future.
That 17 years they thought they had their justice
and then to be told, oh well no, these weren't the ones that did it, sorry, we made a complete and utter fucking cock up of it.
But imagine how guilty you'd feel.
Oh, the parents now, the parents now feel awful, like, so bad, considering as well they were hugging and kissing and cheering and, like that in court. Do that in their fucking faces. They feel awful.
When you've just...
And then it comes out that they never did it, like, you'd feel like the most biggest piece of shit ever.
Oh, it is. There's nothing good about the story. There's nothing.
Not one thing. And the fact that it took so long. So you had corrupt police from the very fucking start, just because of their... Not even the police. Juvenile correction officer want to be cops that couldn't actually make the force.
They're basically mall cops, let's be quite honest here.
They're prejudice against these kids. Then you had cop not filing things properly, believing stupid things without evidence to back it up, and then a judge going around openly speaking about the case before a fucking verdict was given. Two members of the jury that would have fucking swayed the decision, even if they would have had a shadow of a doubt. If you're having someone important that's over, like, criminal cases, like a judge telling you, well, I think these boys did it, you're going to think, oh, well, this is this man's job. Like,
he's obviously educated on it, and if he thinks the evidence points towards them, I'll listen to him.
Just a complete fucking miscarriage of justice for everybody involved. I've never seen the likes of it.
It is entirely...
It's probably the worst one we've done in regards to, like, people being set up.
Yeah, this is definitely...
One of the top, 100%.
And I don't think I've ever stared into the void and had it look back at me as much as I have on this fucking episode. Wow.
I don't even know what to say, like...
It's too late to even get justice for these kids now, because there's no way to conclusively prove what happened without
evidence.
A confession.
Confession, and even evidence that was stored correctly, and not in a brown paper bag that you got from a fucking Walmart.
It's now what? It's
27 years
later?
25, 26 years, I'd say.
26. Oh, yes, it was 94 that the conviction was. But 93 was the murder,
wasn't
it? Yeah,
93 was the murder, yeah.
So it is 27 years later since that evidence would have been collected. Oxygen, man. It is the biggest corrupter of any fucking material.
You'll break it
and
down.
You just let it wreak havoc on your evidence.
Yeah.
It's ruined.
Literally, oxygen is the reason people, like, fucking die. And then they just leave the evidence. Oh, my God.
They just leave that open to the elements.
Like, it's just...
You're never going to get a positive ID off of that now. Nothing. No. There's nothing. So this is what we need... Whoever the fuck actually did this to come forward, or else we're never going to get justice for anyone in this story. And that is the hardest part, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's never, like, realistically in cases like this, it justice never really happens.
No.
I had to just do this, and I hope I've done it justice. I don't fucking know, like, I couldn't make cock of balls of it, but...
I don't think you did. I think... Based on how fucking angry and deflated me and Quiva look right now, I think you did your job and told the story well, because if we were in any way happy, that would have meant you didn't tell it right.
Yeah. It's just, since I've, like, obviously traumatized myself, thanks, Matt, it's always something that, like, it has stuck with me. And then, obviously, as I got older and looked into it more, I like that, like, not that I was in, like, the same group as you or whatever. Fucking goth kid at heart, man. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was a little weirdo secretly. So
oh,
it's
100%.
Like, it's just, like, you could either see yourself, like, I know we've said this, I don't know how many times, you could see yourself, or... I could see you in this, or I could see, like, one of the lads we went to school with.
Yeah.
Like this.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I can see all three of us in that. Like, I can see Savannah being Damien, me being the fella that's a bit simple, and then Lizzie's the other one.
Oh my God, Quiver.
Let's be real, that's who we are.
Honestly,
in the story.
Honestly, though, can't argue with.
Not like, the fact...
You were definitely the one that puts us in the shit, because you were so fucking nervous about being, like... The confrontation of being questioned by the police. I could actually
and
see
not
it, that
because
I'm just
you're
like,
dumb.
Yeah, obviously I eat babies.
But because as well, you don't have a little emo streak in you. So you don't.
Exactly.
You
were the least
that's
emo.
That's where I was going with it. Not the fucking, not dobbing you in, like, but.
And
I could definitely imagine myself accidentally doing it, like, because I'm not good at lying. I'm a bad liar.
Like, oh, yeah, of course then I fucking killed him. And then being like, you're a sack. You know, you would say so about a turd.
Yeah, dude, what are you going to do about it?
Just be like, yeah, you're a fucking moron.
Exactly.
Which is what these kids were fucking doing. Like, imagine a cop coming up to
and
you.
And we are three sarcastic bitches, so, 100%.
On the best
we
days.
We would have done the exact...
Could you imagine someone came up to us and accusing of a triple tile murder? I'll tell a quick story. It's not at all relevant, but I even remember once, I was buying your Christmas presents, and me and Quiva were out shopping on Shop Street in Galway, and some fella approached us about Concern, do you know, the charity, on about...
This fucking
like women dying in pregnancy, and because it was just so shocking and so jarring, me and Queeves are laughing. because it was the way that he was telling us as well. He was like, haha, yeah, like people dying while giving birth's really funny. And we were like, no, that's not why we're laughing. Like, it just like the awkwardness.
But yeah. He started like laughing like as if it was a joke then. Like he tried to like, he was really trying to do the whole like relate to them story, but you could tell he didn't get that it was funny. Awkward. We were laughing because it was awkward, not because we thought that women dying of fucking... Yeah. Like all this and babies having birth defects, and then he started being like, haha, yeah, like it's hilarious, like look at this, and then this happened, haha, and we were like, no, it's not funny. It was so awkward. Like,
I could understand why being told something like that, you'd either laugh like out of pure awkwardness.
And it's a known fact that dark humor is a coping mechanism for depression. Absolutely. So like, it's all of that combined, being a dumb teenager, it's being a little goth kid, it's a defense mechanism, it's everything
wrapped up in one.
It is not
ball.
Indicative of murder. No. I think we've probably said it all.
I
for
think
today
so. Look, anybody listening,
yeah, I have nothing
reach
left
out with your opinions, because we want to hear them. We want to hear who you think might be the actual killer, or any theories that you may have. Let us know
any information that maybe we missed out on. Like,
yeah, because like, look,
send it our way.
I spent a couple of days doing this, but honest God, it melted my brain that fucking much that there is definitely stuff I left out. There 100% is definitely stuff I left out. So if you want a more accurate, not more accurate, but if you want more detail of what had happened, I would look up like the Paradise Lost documentary, but like that trigger
with,
warning
with a case this
big,
as long as our episodes are, we can't fit every single detail into
like
each
those
episode.
Documentaries,
we do our best, but
are
some
an
stuff
hour and a
to
half
go.
To 2 hours each, so that's 6 hours of a documentary and like trying to pack it into what we're on 2 hours now of a recording,
but that'll be condensed to 1 hour and 40 I'd say for what we actually release, because we can't really release more than that. So we give you the best detail that time allows us to give.
Yeah.
So if you have any more information for us that you want to send our way, any opinions, thoughts,
corrections,
even
go
like
on.
A suggestion.
Go ahead.
Yeah, corrections also. Or suggestions of what you would like to us to cover in future, we are open for it. It is c.e.s.poolpod@gmail.com. Shoot us the same thing, just up to pod for our Insta and our Twitter. You can DM us there too. We are open for anything you guys want to throw
or
our way.
Or even
so let
a
us
personal
know.
Fucking story. Always looking to crack one of those out, because I think that'd be hilarious.
Yep.
Bring some joy to our dismal life.
Yeah, if anyone has any like scary stories or anything that we could
like
tell. Oh
ghost,
my God, that would be so
be
cool.
It, like
weird
Matrix stories that happened similarly to Guiva. Anything crazy.
Yeah, if anyone has any like anonymous stories that they'd like us to tell.
Yes.
We could read them out maybe at the start or the end of each episode. And like, we'll keep obviously details, etc. private. Oh my God, that would be so cool.
Yeah, send it our way. We know there's enough of you guys listening, so don't be shy. We've seen our numbers. This has been a whole thing. Yeah. We might maybe put a trigger warning in.
Ye give out to me for bringing in like the real dark fucking episodes, and then Lizzie just comes in clutch.
But
like,
this episode was meant to be dark. You bring the darkness to the lighthearted
which
episode,
terrifies
like,
people.
We're trying to have fun today, and you just want to talk about drowning children.
I just can't tell the difference
the
anymore between what's bad and good.
We've broken ourselves.
Once there's no kids being killed, it's like...
But there was child murder in yours.
Which one?
They were being yeeted down the stairs and kicked in heads and shit.
Little ghost kids playing five-a-side.
Yeah.
Oh, that track.
Yeah, but you want, I had to give the little backstory. Like, they did that a shit
a
time.
Little,
and I had to tell you about it.
Your backstory went on for 40 minutes. The ghost story lasted 10.
Yeah, but, well, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I don't see a better way to wrap that up than just us giving out to Guiva again. That seems on brand. And
poor Guiva, she said, why the fuck
probably
am I friends with these cunts?
In that case, that makes it next week. Oh, good Lord, I'm not prepared yet, but I should be by then. We are back with me for the Black Dahlia, a case I have been dying to cover on this podcast since we started. Honestly, I'm not going to lie, it's low-key the reason I started the podcast to begin with. I was like, I just want to talk about the Black Dahlia.
I want to give my opinion.
Yes, I have many of them. Yeah, we'll be back next week for that. And then Guiva follows up after me with hers. The whole point of this series is that we are kind of, we're over our 20 episode mark now. We're kind of getting into the flow of this whole podcast thing. And we thought that we would kind of throw homage back to our This Is Why We're Gore Whores episode. But rather than do three short stories, or
like that one
as
short
as we could make them, that episode, they were incredibly long actually. But rather than smushing three stories into one episode, rather, we decided to do a series about the cases that really stuck with us and matter to us. So that's exactly what we're doing. You can see, you can fucking hear it, that Lizzie really related and attached herself to the West Memphis Three, and understandably so. I have the same thing with the Black Dahlia and the secret episode that Quiva will be giving that we will reveal next week after the Black Dahlia is done. Same fucking thing. They've just really ingrained themselves into our brain, and that's why we're covering them. Yeah, that's this is why we're here at this point. So that is the purpose of this series, and we hope that even though it is going to be heavy, it is going to make you angry, yeah. It is going to make you question your place in the goddamn universe, but at the same time, we hope it entertains you. So other than that, I can't think of anything else to say. Can you guys?
No.
Anything? Anything?
My brain is completely moved on.
Okay. Yep.
It's probably the Malibu having a bit of effect on me as well. Look.
Yeah, I am. I've moved on to stronger alcohol.
I'll be heading for the whiskey.
So it's probably about time to wrap
exactly.
up this.
Next.
Alrighty. Okay. We hope you didn't get overly depressed on this episode, and we hope you don't do the same thing next week. Like we said, send us your thoughts and opinions. And in the meantime, we're adding our new tagline. We're going to go for positive vibes and negative tests. And other than that, always be a hypocrite.
Don't forget to tense your ankles.
And join our cult. But if you are a shit brain fucking detective, it's not satanic, so fucking stop it.
It's a fun cult. Why is it always the end of the episode that instead of actually letting me do the ending and wrap it up so we can have a conversation, you start it right when I'm about to say the final lines of the podcast?